You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Is the plague at all a threat in the modern day?
No.
Following our previous catch-up with the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez March, we spoke to Helen Patousis-Harris, an associate professor at the University of Auckland, for her take on the findings from the COVID-19 response inquiry. In our conversation, Helen talked to us about the prevalence of misinformation during the pandemic and how the inquiry report failed to address it in its 39 recommendations to the government.
So to start off, what are the key takeaways from the inquiry report into New Zealand's COVID-19 response?
I think there were a number of things that came up. Clearly, a lot of things were done really well and under really difficult circumstances, which it highlighted. But what I was really pleased to see, it also picked up on the things that I think were problematic and didn't go well, which was good, it's good to see, because those are the lessons that we need to learn. And there's obviously, there's also still other things that are going to be covered in the next series of inquiries.
How prevalent was misinformation during the pandemic, and what impacts did it have on New Zealand's pandemic response?
In that report, it comes up throughout again and again and again as a barrier to everything from trying to get the vaccine rolled out to things like lockdowns and pretty much every aspect, actually, when you go through the report. It was a significant challenge, a significant obstacle. And I think that's something that played out across the rest of the world as well.
Can you give us an idea of the kind of misinformation that was particularly prevalent during the pandemic?
Oh my gosh, it spanned everything from the completely outrageous, such as claims that the vaccine would make you magnetic and that you were being loaded with nanobots and things like that, which some people did actually buy into. But there were also the more subtle, I guess, subtle bits of information. And the misinformation I understand the best is the vaccine-related misinformation, where people would raise, you know, when you just ask the question or suggest things may be unknown when in fact they might be known quite well. And just really subtle way, I guess, approaches to manipulating the current narrative or the thought, which came up all over the place. It was prolific.
So do you think a lot of the submissions to the inquiry regarding vaccine safety and mandates were partially motivated by misinformation?
Yeah, I haven't seen the submissions as such, but I think there's going to be a lot of additional submissions into the next round of inquiry, and that's where they're going to sort of look at vaccine safety, etc. But it's my understanding that there were an overwhelming number of submissions from people who were worried about things that they perceived were an issue, perhaps, as opposed to those things being an actual demonstrable issue, I guess. So there's things that worry people, and they might not necessarily be based in, when I say fact, the fact is as best as we can know it.
So as you mentioned earlier, the inquiry report frequently mentions the role of disinformation in the pandemic, but it has limited references to it in the final recommendations of the report. Can you tell us a little bit about your thoughts on this?
Oh, yeah, well, that's where I guess I get frustrated, because for years and years, and this isn't new, so this goes, you know, the study of misinformation and disinformation actually goes back to antiquity. That's how old it is. And actually how to address it also goes back a long way. But more recently, we have a really good understanding about misinformation. We have a good understanding about how it's spread today, the current technology, the social networks and social media, etc. That has been really well described and captured. We also know the influence that it has on people. That has been really well captured and well described. There's a whole lot of research that shows how you address it and how you can mitigate the negative impacts of bad information. And these two things seem to exist almost separately in a way. And what you don't see is the strategies to address it being implemented. In fact, you don't really even see much of a discussion about it. And I think that's where, I mean, I get really frustrated, because like we know some of the things we can do to alleviate some of this problem, but it needs good, strong leadership and coordination, and needs to bring lots of people on board to work together. And that's not just bringing the people in the health authorities together, for example. It's bringing people from the community in there. It's bringing people who are the tech entrepreneurs and the social media and the rest of the media in. It's getting everybody together because it needs a multi-pronged attack. It's not something that one person can solve. But that's what you don't see. You don't even see a strategy, I think, to try and bring that together.
So just going off of that, is there a way for New Zealand to better address misinformation in future public health crises?
Absolutely. Basically, you implement a strategy that includes all the things we know can help. So it involves education at different levels, whether you sort of educating the public about something or educating educators about something, whether you are actually working with media, all kinds of media, including social media platforms, on agreeing on how you manage this and implementing, you know, perhaps some guardrails to keep people safe. And there's a thing, for example, called pre-bunking. So we can go and we can debunk fake news. We can address misinformation. But actually, what's really effective as well is actually preparing people to receive bad information and actually highlighting the problems or the fallacies in the information before they receive it. And then you start to be able to recognise bad information when you see it. And you go, oh, yes, you know, this information looks to be like it could be false information. And actually help people to recognise it. So there's a whole lot of things that can be done. And working with community leaders, don't leave them out in the cold. They need to be in round the table because the influencers and the community leaders are the people that need to take messages to their own communities where they are trusted and they can actually convey messages in a way that is useful to their communities. So it actually requires an effort and some resource.
So do you think that these steps to pre-bunk or address misinformation will actually impact the kind of people who are likely to be susceptible to misinformation, or do you think it might be possibly preaching to the choir?
Yeah, it's been demonstrated to be effective. It's the thing is, you've got to go where people are. You've got to meet people where they're at. Now, there are a lot of people whose minds you would never change. You can't have a conversation because you're actually not agreeing on things that are fundamental and you don't even trust each other. So that's not really the first place you go to have a conversation. The conversations, you know, where people actually, before you start getting this mountain of disinformation, to say, look, you know, if you see information that says this, this is what's wrong with it. Teaching us to think a little bit more critically and also teaching us, you know, maybe back check something before you share it. Misinformation is where people share things, but not maliciously. They might not be aware that what they're sharing is problematic, whereas disinformation is carefully crafted for a purpose. It's quite different. But that's sort of like your top of the food chain, right, where somebody kind of creates something for their own purposes and then it gets shared broadly like a sort of like a megaphone. And that essentially has the effect of shaping, for example, online narratives, which have probably got broader purposes than just influencing what people think about vaccines or infectious diseases.
And so finally, moving forward, is there anything that you think the Royal Commission needs to expand upon in phase two of the inquiry?
To see, they're going to look at one of the areas they're going to that they didn't cover in this was, for example, vaccine safety. And I'll be really interested to watch that space because that's my space. So that's all. And I guess I'm not expecting to see much about the misinformation and disinformation because I think, you know, that has been raised pretty thoroughly in this first report, just not what we're going to do about it.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.